Good morning, good afternoon. Well, here we are, another episode of DX Talks. And this time we're bringing some special talents, not any talents. It's very special. And when we say special, it's about the culture background. It's about the innovation. It's about the positioning. It's about opportunities. It's about making it on a global scale and making it to the next level. That's an opportunity some countries dream to have, or some people would love to be in that position. This is a position that doesn't always open for many. She'll correct me if I'm wrong later on, but it is a privilege to be part of this elite business school, or Harvard University, if you want to call it, not just business school. It's way beyond. It's a historical university from different kinds, different things, one of the best. Let me welcome, without further ado, let me welcome this amazing person, young and talented, Maya Nasser, postdoctoral research fellow at Harvard University. I'd like to welcome you to DX Talks. And Maya, can you introduce yourself?
Of course, and thank you so much, Rudy, for having me. I'm really excited to chat with you today about all the different topics and projects. So to introduce myself, I'm currently a scientist and an aerospace engineer at Harvard University working on the methane SAT project. Previously, I've studied aerospace engineering from my bachelor's throughout my PhD at MIT. So been in Cambridge for quite some time now, where I got a chance to work specifically on the Mars 2020 rover mission, the Perseverance mission. And I previously also contributed to the Cassini mission activity on Saturn and Titan. My expertise goes at the intersection of really aerospace engineering and science, but also space law, policy, and technology strategy. So I'm very interdisciplinary in nature, and I'm a huge advocate for the increase of representation in the space sector, especially on the global scale. So I'm the co-founder and project lead of the Humans Project, which is a payload that we sent to the ISS and to the moon to increase representation in space. And I'm happy to chat about that further as well. So yeah, thanks again for having me. And I'm really excited to chat.
Yeah, definitely. I don't know if I'm not correct on anything I said before, but it's really important to look at you as a young, successful person, at least starting from the things that you mentioned, and which are very few people from the Middle East in specific to participate in such activities. Those are very elite activities, very rare activities, very limited activities, if you want to call them. You mentioned the Hoover robot, Hoover helicopter. That is, it's another project where it's very, very limited to be part of those activities in a global scale. So how about a young person from the Middle East, from Lebanon, who is really, what inspired you and your passion for space exploration during your upbringing in Lebanon?
Of course, yeah. I mean, I was really interested in space for as long as I can remember. I grew up in one of the small villages in Lebanon. So, you can always see the dark sky and you can always see the beautiful stars and things like that. So I always found that very fascinating. But more importantly, I always found space as a refuge to kind of answer these big questions about us. I was very curious as a kid of like, are we alone? Where's the universe coming from? Is there life on different planets? I really had a sense of curiosity to ask these big questions, and I found space as a refuge for trying to tackle them. And I've always wanted to, dreamt of being an astronaut, and this is kind of still the upcoming goal in my life. But because I was really passionate about that, I was able to, take the next step and be like, if I want to really pursue it, maybe I'd have to consider options outside of Lebanon. And I'm really grateful for Amadeus at the time for their help and the process of applying to colleges where I was able to make it to MIT and start my involvement. But really what inspired me is the fascination and space to connect to us as humanity in our universe and, you know, we're who we are as people.
Yeah, it's very interesting, you know, how you take it and then the opportunity or the door that opened up and then you were able to jump on it. And then did your journey in MIT influence your approach more into the aerospace engineering, or was it, you know, by mistake? Was it, no, you mentioned, you know, you look at the stars, but the coincidence for you to be where you are today and to participate in those projects, was it? Of course, there's hard work, there's luck sometimes, but was it directly with MIT or no?
I think, you know, yeah, I think normally in any opportunities in life, you know, sometimes you have to be at the right time, the right place. Sometimes some things align and you'll be able to, you know, pursue your interests. But it also takes a lot of work, you know, the process to apply to colleges and come to MIT was, you know, took multiple years of prep and work. You know, MIT itself was one of the most challenging experiences of my life. So it is not purely, you know, luck or chance or coincidence. It also takes a lot of time and effort to be able to be, you know, a part of such programs and such opportunities. That said, I think MIT definitely had a big influence in the way I perceive, you know, the space sector and the way I approach different topics and different missions. I think obviously the teaching on, you know, problem solving, you take it with you in any mission and anything that happens in your life and my current work. So that's very important. In my PhD, one of the main things you learn also, you know, how to become an expert in a topic so fast. And this is very important when you go to industry, when you go to work, because you're suddenly, you know, you have so many new topics that, you know, you come across. It's very different than what you've studied. And having the skills to approach these problems and be able to become an expert on certain issues in a shorter amount of time is a big important skill. But really more importantly at MIT, I think one of the most things I'm most grateful for is you're surrounded by a group of the brightest minds on this planet. It's just an incredible place. So if you're suddenly walking on campus and you bump into someone there and you chat with them, they are working on some extreme cutting edge technology type of thing. So it's really fascinating to be within this group. And it teaches you how to cooperate, how to work in a team, and how the best projects require these different efforts, these different backgrounds. And that was something that was a learning process, because it humbles you a lot in terms of how much you know, and it makes you, you know, tap into these doors, tap into these opportunities, collaborate with people. And it also opens up opportunities for things that, you know, you think are impossible. So for a student to be able to start an idea such as the Humans Project that I mentioned, and to have it now on the surface of the moon, it's just doesn't, you know, if you ask me, is that possible as a student, I would be like, no, what are the chances? But MIT gives you opportunities to help in making these kind of high dreams or big goals or missions that you think might be impossible really happen. So I think it changes something in your head to be like, oh, I can do this. I mean, it's difficult, but it's not impossible to make. The chances are low, but, you know, it's still possible. People have done it. I can do it. So I think it shifts your approach to questions. It shifts your approach to difficult conversations. And I think that's something I'm very grateful to have had the chance to be part of. Why this is important is when we want to send humans to space, these humans need to, you know, breathe on the surface of Mars, so they need oxygen. But more importantly, they also need oxygen as a rocket propellant to get them from the surface of Mars up in a Mars ascent vehicle into orbit that gets them back into back to Earth, back home. So in order to, if we don't want to make use of space resources, and if we want to actually send with the astronauts all the oxygen that they need from Earth, the cost gets astronomically expensive as we go. So it makes, from an economic point of view, a lot more sense to live off the land, to go to a place and make use of the resources that are there. Obviously, this opens up a lot of, you know, legal and ethical and other issues, but from a science point of view, that's kind of the main goal. So for us, the easiest option that's available on Mars, you've got hydrated regolith, you've got water ice, but but these require drilling and to be able to get them and process them. What we do is get the easier option of them, which is the atmosphere. So you take it in, you dust it out, take it, heat it up, and let it go through a chemical process that produces the oxygen. So in this mission, I was really grateful to have the chance to work early on the actual like vacuum chamber hardware testing under more like operating conditions of our sensors to make sure we understand how the readings are going to look like under the temperatures and pressures that we expect. And the second piece is I was able to work on the more surface operations. So I was leading our science payload downlink, which means I'm responsible for taking all the data that we get from the surface of Mars, analyzing it, reporting any faults, while at that time working on Mars time, which was very exciting. It was, a nighttime here on Earth, and having, the entire team gathered around me on a Zoom call to see in real time the data analysis, which was still during the pandemic. So it was very exciting, very stressful, and hopefully, by successfully demonstrating it, we have been able to open the door for a lot of other ISRU work on the Moon, on Mars, and other planets.
So in brief, we can breathe on Mars.
We demonstrated that capability. We need to scale it up at the moment, but that was demonstrated. Now a small dog can breathe, I'd say, but a human, we need to scale it up a bit more.
But that's where things start.
Yeah.
So this is where I'd love to know more about the Humans Project and what impact do you hope it will have on a global representation in the space?
Yeah, for sure. So the Humans Project, Human stands for Humanity United with MIT Arts and Nanotechnology in Space. It's a project whose main goal is to really create a symbolic avenue for space access globally. When we started this project, it was a concept because of how exclusive space seems, how even international projects such as the ISS only has a small handful of countries involved in it. So we wanted to, take that further. We wanted to have people feel closer, more connected to the space. And this is when we actually had an open to collect voices and to collect voices and messages from all people globally about the meaning of space to them in their own native languages. So we were able to take in all of this collected data and nano etch it on a disk inspired by the Golden Record that we sent to the International Space Station. And most recently, we also sent it to the surface of the Moon. So we landed, earlier this month on the surface of the Moon. So this is kind of the main goal of it, to make sure that space is not really a privilege for a few, but it's really a shared legacy for all of us around the world. And I hope from it, we are taking all of these stories and voices and messages from different backgrounds, from different countries, from languages I've never represented before in space, and having people now, if they can look at the moon, they can feel they are part of it. Their voice, their message is literally on its surface, and I'm hoping that will help in sharing this spaces for everyone kind of message.
That's very interesting. When you open the door for opportunities in the world, especially from our region, and then how can people contribute? And this is where I'm gonna go a little bit. How can you start something in Lebanon towards inspiring some of the Lebanese? We had some participated in NASA SpaceApps challenges with some people back in the days, but that's not enough. How can we start? We had, unfortunately, some trials, successful trials for in the 50s and 60s, which was banned and stopped. But that's not where we're gonna go today. But I think analyzing research apps is something we can definitely do. So how can something be started? Or maybe there's something you already inspired to do here.
Yeah, for sure. And this is a really great question. And that's something that's very near and dear to my heart. So actually, a few weeks ago, I organized this Lebanese space panel where one of the we collect, like basically gathered these amazing space leaders from Lebanon that are currently working in the US and Europe. And one of the questions I asked was specifically this: what is their view on the future of space exploration in Lebanon? How can Lebanon be part of this story? And for me personally, I think it's really harder to imagine with the different, funding issues, with the different, political uncertainties, be able to create a full-on space agency as of now. I think I'd be really interested to start something like this. I think it's a bit early on to do something like that, though, in Lebanon. So, one of the main hopes is using schools, universities, and professors and faculty and students and student clubs that are already interested in space and astronomy and astrophysics, making use of these available community and resources to start something in aerospace engineering, to start this kind of Lebanese space network in Lebanon. So we have a lot of folks that, have been able to create CubeSats and, universities be able to work on smaller pieces of the technologies that go into space. Space is very interdisciplinary. You can come from any background and still be able to contribute. From an astronomy point of view, there's a lot of amazing astronomers that we can able to collaborate with and have, combined together into some more concerted effort. The other big piece I'd love to see happen is more representation of Lebanon in the global forum. So we have the International Astronautical Federation, we have the UN, UN COPIUS, UN Committee of Peaceful Use of Outer Space. So we have a bunch of UN committees that work on issues in the space sector. If we can have increased representation for Lebanon to have a voice on these international fora, I think that would be very useful and will put Lebanon somewhere in the region, somewhere on the map. And the last piece I'd say is, in the Middle East, there's currently incredible efforts happening from UAE, Saudi Arabia, Jordan, from, Egypt, all across. There's so many amazing space efforts that are ongoing. So these space efforts didn't happen without collaborations. I mean, the UAE space programs was very heavily, influenced by help from the US and help from JAXA, the Japanese Space Agency. So to be able to make a lot of the missions. So I think if we can foster these types of collaborations, even within the Arab space agencies around us, that will help and have more launch opportunities, have more, collaborations on larger projects, and students from their universities, from an academic setting, can be part of that. And one last thing I'd say, I mean, currently, if you look at the US and globally, the private sector is very critical. So companies that are private companies and startups are playing such a huge role in the space sector, and the opportunities are endless for the types of things you can do with startups. So I would really encourage people who are entrepreneurs who have, a passion for starting a new idea that could help in the space world to do that, because it's a growing effort right now, and it's even a faster impact than, governmental agencies to make things
Yeah,
happen.
you just need that one problem to possibly try to solve it and then scale it across. So are you headhunted by X or not yet?
By SpaceX?
Yeah. Sorry, by SpaceX, yes.
I have different interests in the types of things I'd like to pursue. So I'm very interested in more deep space missions that are aligned from an academic setting to the work that we're doing right now. So I think from a ethical point of view, I have certain agreements with my type of academic work that I'm doing at the moment. The industry doesn't always match.
Yeah, I have a distant cousin of mine who is banned from coming to Lebanon because of his NASA affiliations. Are you still allowed to travel wherever you are, wherever you
I
want?
think I think so. Yeah, I think I mean obviously currently with different immigration issues, things get a lot more a lot more difficult in different versions of things. But yeah, I think we could always come and visit, and Lebanon is always some place that I want to be part of, and I want to help and build and shape the future of space exploration in. So I definitely don't want to lose that connection to it at all.
Yeah, now you know you have have an address to start whenever you think of something. Now, we will definitely will pitch in on something. I would just want to follow up later on those satellites that were created, nanosatellites project. I might be seeing them tomorrow, so I'll see the head tomorrow and I'll try to ask him what happened. If there's any update, I'll follow up with you. What's happening on the on challenges perspective on the international law space, especially on emerging space nations contribute to the sustainable space exploration? You mentioned some, but in general, is there anything more that needs to be, solved on a global scale?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, the types of issues there are really also endless. The space sector is growing. There's a lot of, older laws and regulations that are out of date, that they do not match the current, speed of the space sector progress. When we look at the number of satellites that have been launched to orbit, we can see just a dramatic exponential increase in the amount of satellites. So the regulations that existed are not suitable for the current status of things. So issues in space sustainability in orbit, issues in space governance. So I talked about space resource use. Now we have exceeding missions that go to, the moon, to asteroids, and start collecting resources to make use of them, bring them back to Earth, or be able to economically, commercialize them. And it's really not clear from a global governance framework if legally that's okay, because these are not supposed to be first come, first serve resources. These are kind of shared resources for all people around the world. So I think there's a lot of issues in space sustainability and space debris, and space governance overall, of resources and of other aspects. And I think having a larger voice for emerging space countries would be very important to be able to make sure that it's not only the big players who are claiming a lot of things as a first come, first serve type of things. Especially when we look at orbit around the Earth. I mean, these satellites are not orbiting over one country, they're orbiting around everywhere. Any of these deorbited satellites or pieces of rockets that we're dealing with is falling on islands, is falling on different countries. So there's a lot of issues that become, it's really a global scale. It's a question of global commons, and we need to be very careful about how do we address that from a legal and ethical point of view, before, before things are too late. And I think the space sector, the private space sector, is generally pushing things to an edge in terms of the legal questions that we can tackle. So I think it's very exciting, but it's also very scary times to be at when it comes to a lot of these space technologies and regulating them.
Yeah, and I hope it continues to be, inclusive in terms of how many countries can participate, not just to the elite few or who have the monetary and research power. In orbit, we have around 7,000 Starlink satellites within 3, 4 years. The clutter happened. And China announced recently that they have tested, I think, two times faster or three faster satellite speeds than Starlink. So that means they are also on board to clutter more in the space, because that system does not meet with that system. Tomorrow, the Russian systems will be also enabled or introduced. So that will be kind of a mess. Anyway, so let's go to you're a Lebanese scientist. In the aerospace field in specific, what challenges have you overcome?
Yeah, I mean, being from Lebanon, the space sector is not a good mix of things to have in the US. Obviously, from a security point of view, from a lot of space projects tend to be only limited to US citizens, sometimes green card holders. But there's obviously a limitation when I first came to the US to be able to, be part of any projects, any internships. So I think it was always an issue to feel left out because, you're a very minority of the students around you. Everyone's, getting opportunities, collaborating with people, being able to work in companies of interest, and gaining the expertise and gaining the actual, internship experiences, for example, in college, to be able to take a job later on, and you're suddenly on your own, not being able to be part of anything because of your passport. And if you want to even be part of some, academic missions, you're also not allowed to, work on many of its aspects. If you work in a specific company, you're constantly, being targeted in terms of what things you can access and what things you don't. Some aspects of that make sense, others don't. So I always found that a bit of an issue, but one of the main ways to get around it was really working through academia and working through such projects and opportunities from an academic standpoint from universities, but because you can do a lot of amazing research without necessarily needing to be an employee of X countries or X companies, and you'd be able to still contribute and learn and be part of amazing teams. And that helped me a lot. That is how I worked on Mars 2020 Perseverance mission, how I worked on Cassini, how currently I'm working on MethaneSat. So there are a lot of opportunities in different schools to be able to be part of these projects and be able to make your mark in the aerospace sector. But it's not easy, and I wouldn't lie that it's not just being from Lebanon. I think a lot of international students face that, obviously with different categories of limitations of international students depending your specific country. But it's really unfortunate that some things are out of your control, but you're impacted by them just for a certain passport. But there are some ways around it to be able to still be participate and make an impact in the space sector. And there's a lot of allies and people who help and support, and those are really important and critical along the way.
Yeah, that's very important. I hope you were not affected by the recent executive orders. Immediate executive orders. I have some friends who were, sent a notice period of 7 days, just in the midst of their university degrees. And anyway, that's sad. I'm gonna move to the continuation of what you said, and then, what advice do you offer those young individuals, especially from the underrepresented areas?
Yeah, I think one of the main important things is to network and meet people. I think one advice I had when I was in Lebanon that still sticks to me right now is the best time to meet people is when you need them the least. So I think this is always a mentality that I go with right now, and it helps you become more curious and learn about other people's work and connect to other people without needing anything from them. And over time, you realize that these people will help you, you will help them. It becomes a symbiotic relationship, and you'll be able to succeed a lot more and have more opportunities by creating these networks. So networking, really, if you have someone of interest, just shoot them an email, find them on LinkedIn and send them a message. Like, try to reach out. I think there's a lot of ways to connect to people. Go to events where people might be, coming, and try to talk to people. I think that is an incredibly important piece of advice. And this also ties into finding good mentors. I think when I was in high school, I basically reached out to Dr. Charles Lashie, for example, in the US, and he very surprisingly enough replied. And since then, became my mentor when I came to the US, and I worked with him on Cassini. So I think, and we still, talk and collaborate. So I think having amazing mentors is very important, people that you can trust and people that will help you along the way. So these two things, I think, are the most critical part. And the last thing I'd say is it's not impossible. So just keep your passion about the world that you're doing. Sometimes we limit ourselves that my dream is to go, say, like to MIT and work there, and that's it. Like, if I do anything else, it's not going to work out. And the more you realize is that there's so many different ways to contribute. It doesn't have to be exactly what you planned or the initial, track that you had. It actually never works out that way. A lot of things are, throwing dots and hoping they connect at some point. So apply to different things. Always have plan B's and C's and D's, and I don't think that if something doesn't work out, that's the end of the day. Life is really unpredictable, and you never know what aligns along the way. So keep the hope up that something will happen, and it will eventually. So these are three pieces of advice that I would say are important.
Interesting. I'm gonna ask you a question. I hope you can answer it. I was debating with somebody, and then he gave me a nice narrative, which is, in the Middle East, we have only 6 Nobel Prize winners. Okay, after research, they turned out to be 9. 2 of them are political leaders. So we have total of 7 or 6. Let's keep them in that perspective. We need more Nobel Prize winners. And the question is, I'm sure you've not done your research. It's, I'm sure it's out of the world question, but what do you think, knowing what you're doing could lead to a possible breakthrough somewhere, and being the first Lebanese in the last 50 years to be on the Nobel Prize winner.
I'm gonna take a different, like a small different track or approach to your question, because I personally don't feel I'm not huge on the tracks of, you know, awards and assessing success just by how many Nobel Prize winners there exists. By definition, countries that have a lot more money and a lot more funding tends to have a lot more opportunities for such breaking or cutting edge research to happen and be able to win such awards. So I think there's so many other ways to assess the success of different countries and their contribution to the space sector aside from Nobel Prizes and things like that. That said, I think currently there are a lot of work, I'd say from an astrophysics point of view, maybe not aerospace engineering, in the quantum world. I think quantum physics, as it relates to topics of astrophysics, is a topic that is very fascinating. It's very interesting. Again, it could be done from an academic point of view, so it could be done in universities, it could be done in collaboration with other universities, and there's incredible groups of people all around the world trying to tackle topics of, you know, quantum physics as it relates to our current understanding of, you know, space-time, of astrophysics. So I personally would be so interested to see people working on this area, because it helps answer so many questions about the world around us, about the universe, and it also would definitely be something cutting edge enough that could, lead to some Nobel Prize. So combining the existing theories of our classical mechanics and classical view of the world with the quantum world, and being able to find an answer about, from an astrophysics point of view, about space-time, about the world around us, I think that would be very fascinating, and it's a gap that currently exists. So I'd put that out there. Obviously, there's so many different other topics that people could work on, but that is something personally I would love if someone had an answer about it. But I would again emphasize, I don't think you can define the measure of success of a country and its participation by the number of Nobel Prize winners. That's a very niche category of science, and it's very heavily influenced by the amount of, you know, funding and resources available for the scientists.
No, definitely, I agree with you. I second you on this. But because our contribution globally, and this is something when I tour with the universities, I'm always in a fuss with them that whatever you guys are doing, it's not being commercialized. Whatever it is, whatever research, there's always, that it's not the right way as it should supposedly be, and then turned into intellectual property, turned into an invention, turned into something. So that said, of course, winning or not winning doesn't provide that this person is award winner versus others. And you mentioned the funds, and this is where you see them, especially in universities, where they start competing. This university is better than the other one. And then when you start looking into the stats and the key metrics and whatever, and then you find there's $1 billion research grant where, you know, some universities don't dream to make quarter of that in their lifetime. So how could they compete to be on the top 100 list or top 50 list or whatever?
It's really a question of funds, and that's why it's important to do collaborations, honestly, because I think there's so many amazing, really incredibly smart Lebanese people all around the world, doing incredible successes and, you know, say ESA and in Europe and at NASA and the US and different private companies. So, we can harness a lot of the existing community and network to create collaborations, and even again, create collaborations with existing space agencies in the Arab world and the Gulf region. I think there's so many ways of making use of the brains and, you know, expertise of people in Lebanon, but also making use of the funds and the money that could exist elsewhere in different grants. So I think it does require a lot of effort. And unfortunately, it's really hard to put the time to this effort when people are, you know, struggling with a lot of other political uncertainties and issues. So that puts, you know, space exploration really in the back burner because it's not a priority compared to other things. So I think that when we overcome that piece, we'd have a lot more time to actually put and invest in certain technology developments and collaborations.
Very interesting. Any last words before we end this episode?
No, I think I'm very hopeful to hopefully see something in Lebanon grow in the space sector. You know, from the panel on the organized few weeks ago, I realized that there's so much interest, so many people signed up, so many people wanted to learn about the space sector. So I'm hoping this grows, and I'm hoping I can help in any way possible in growing the effort back home. Yeah, thank you again for having me and for the discussion.
So here you go, guys. That's your address. Maya Nasser, she's you can start with her, bug her, she's ready for that. And she will guide you where you want to go. Thank you for being our guest today and for sharing your insights. It's amazing. Big thanks to our viewers as well for tuning in. You can watch the recording at any of our channels. Until next time, stay tuned and then we'll see you soon. Thank you again, Maya,
Awesome.
and
Thank
all of
you.
the best. And we'll definitely keep in touch for more
Of course.
updates and hopefully future collaboration.
Of course. Thank you so much. Have a good day. Bye bye.
Have a good one. And with that, this is where we end our episode and see you soon.